25 years of Vampire the Masquerade, a retrospective podcast. Brought to you by UtilityMuffinLabs.com. Welcome to the Dark Ages.
Welcome to another episode of 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Bob.
And how you doing today, Bob?
Doing pretty good, actually. Life is strange.
Yeah, it is, definitely. I usually do a bunch of, like, legwork before we do these podcasts where, like, I'll see, hey, who's new on our Patreon? Hey, who's got questions? I didn't do any of that today. I just didn't feel like it. I just was like, you know what I feel like doing today? Being lazy and being less prepared than normal. Although, you know, Road to Kings, you know, what else am I going to do? Read through it. So
I do have something.
Yeah.
I wanted to, on behalf of us at UML, I want to thank everybody for the support and love and hitting our goal so quickly regarding to get the new laptop up and going, which I'm on now. I did individually message everybody and grouped you through those who donated and whatnot. But I want to let you know the love, the outpour was tremendous. And I do appreciate that. We appreciate that. It's you got to understand that when me and Nate, we do this, we know you're there. We know everybody, you know, who listens and whatnot. But we don't, I don't want to say this, and not in a bad way. I mean, it's like you don't necessarily rely on listeners, right? I mean, you do as far as like patronage, obviously, when that comes in. But you feel almost obliged not to ask for anything beyond that. Because you don't want to, we don't want to seem like assholes, right? That's the
exactly.
Point. But there are things that happen, and you know, you don't plan for them. And you guys have had our back. And that is an amazing feeling. I might have been a doubter about that too. And there's no way I could be now. I'm humble. And I do. Yeah. Thank you.
So for people that aren't like 100% aware, and I don't know why most people would even know this, but for the most part, basically I do like our social media stuff. I do the Twitter, I do the Instagram, I do all that fun crap. And Bob basically does Discord. That's like his expertise. That's his area where he handles. And it's kind of like a division of labor. You know, right. I do this, he does that. And so a lot of like the compliments that you guys send or a lot of like the kind words, you know, I'll do my best to try to include Bob in those. But, you know, a lot of times it there's like this degree of a detachment. Like you really don't. You know, the way that he interacts with people that hang out on our Discord, that's different than the way that I interact with people in our social media. And, you know, just a week ago, we were like, man, Bob's computer took a shit. It's trashed. What are we going to do? You know, Bob's sound quality, he's there. We got to record that podcast, but it just sucks. And within 2 days, our fans came together and, you know,
boom,
basically solved our problem. You know, and like, to me, I can't even, it's bizarre. It's like crazy to me in ways I can't understand that. Like there's enough people that, you know, we're not famous. We're not even like internet famous. We're like kind of well-known maybe in the vampire community. And the fact that those folks came out and did the best that they could to help us out in this really jacked up time just blows my mind.
It's nothing but love. And it really changed my perspective on a lot of things. And what I want to state about that, I'm a cynic. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool cynic. And a cynic does not mean you're someone who's negative. What it means is that you're someone who expects nothing, right? You're someone who sees the very, you foresee the very worst possibility so that you don't overreact to it and you can plan to that inevitability. That way, if anything good comes of it and you're proven wrong, it's awesome. It's amazing. Right. And it seems like you guys did your dead set best to go, oh, you're a cynic? Eat love. And I was like, that's right. Awesome, right? Just over the moon about it. It was badass.
Right. And that's part of the reason why I was like, you know what? I'm going to hold off on all that other junk today because I feel like this is more important than like the formulaic, like, hey, who's got a question? We love those questions. Please keep asking them. But like, this is just a moment for us to be like, geez, thank you.
Right.
That's so awesome. One other thing I'd like to mention, and I really want to get you, you know, your feedback and kind of like bounce off of this. But we found out last couple of days, I can't remember exactly when, but as of today, it's May 22nd. Within this week, we found out Gen Con is canceled. So unfortunately, no physical meetup, no people in Indianapolis. And honestly, I feel it's the best case scenario. I don't want to see a bunch of people and run the risk of folks getting sick. But that kind of leaves us in a situation like, are we going to do anything? Are we going to attempt to make an event online or, you know, what have you? And have you even thought about it, Bob?
I have. I've thought about it a couple times. There's folks that we planned with to be at Gen Con with that were like, you know, we did an Airbnb. That Airbnb got canceled because, you know, I guess the owner felt there's no Gen Con. I can't justify. Literally, right. I think the owner had a crisis of conscience. I triple charged for this price normally because of Gen Con. Cannot justify it after the fact, so he let it go. And so we're like, cool. Well, there's a lot of us who are still willing to meet up if possible, and we still don't know what that time is. So we're looking to still possibly have a little something for like 8 people over here. But when it came to online, we sat back and there's a couple thought process. It was like we could do, we're already doing online gaming, right? That's the number one thing. That's already happening. So we don't have to, we don't have to worry about that. The other effect is though, could we run stuff or maybe open up the door for fans to run a game they want us to take an interest in or whatever, just sort of reverse that role. All sky's the limit. I mean, there are programs you could use for card games too. It's just a matter of organization. So, yeah, I put thought to it. The thing is, time. Time is the thing.
Yeah.
And how many are we dealing with? And you can never know with gamers. You know this is true, and everybody listening, don't even try to deny it. This is gamers since I've known of them, okay? I'm like a rare diamond in the rough. If I say I'm going to do something, it's done. No question. However, that is not held by the majority of gamers. And there's a lot of people that'll say, oh yeah, absolutely, I want to be a part, sounds great, be a lot of fun. Then they get home, and it used to be talk to your parents, and then they realize they can't do it, and blah, 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 blah. Oh man, sorry, we'll catch you next time. But as adults, where you're the parents, well, now you got to go home and see if there's, you know, the kids taken care of, if there's actual space. Like, your excitement signed on, but then reality hit you, and we're aware of that. So we need, if we did something like that, we'd have to get through all that junk to see what we're dealing with to be able to plan for it. And that's sort of the challenge I want to put to listeners. If you want to see something done and you would like to have something on that time for Gen Con that maybe your boss pre-approved and you can't get off, you want to do something, my advice and my ask is, we're going to leave it up to you. Get in contact with me and Nate. Commit to a time slot that you have available. And so we can start pulling together a possibility of meeting these demands. Because right now, we don't know when's good for you, who's going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, a lot of things are probably going to be changing between now and then for a lot of people. And, you know, it's hard to say like where any of us are going to be, you know, in August or whatever. But if we have a time, a day, a specific situation, it's going to be easier for us to plan to do external of all the other stuff. So, yeah, come to us. Go to our Utility Muffin Labs Discord and, you know, pitch some ideas. Is there stuff that you want us to participate in? Let us know when, how, etc. And we'll try to work with you. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of moving parts. So, anyways, other than that, we additionally hope everybody is safe. Everybody stays safe. And as restrictions loosen, you all continue to stay safe and healthy and keep listening to podcasts because that's why we're here. And I guess we can now move directly into Road of Kings as I cover the book with my microphone, because I've done this before.
It's always entertaining me when you do it.
Right. Every time. Like, hey, guys, there's this thing in front of me that I know I have to talk into. Watch me as I cover it with a book. So Road of Kings, Bob.
So what I'm going to say is when I read this book, I got progressively more and more stereotypical 1990s gangsta as I read it.
Did you?
I did. Like, because first off, I call this book The Road of Bling. It's that simple, right? Because they talk about some street level things here, right? Like some gangsta mentality. And what are we talking about? Well, in The Road of Kings, keep that in mind. I'll get a little serious, and then we'll be us. But The Road of Kings stems from the Temptations of Cain, wherein Cain declares it is better to reign in darkness than to serve in the light. And that is an interesting statement, right? Because it comes from better to reign in hell than serve in heaven, which is quoted as Satan, the character from Paradise Lost by John Milton. Now, just because you know that, right? I mean, I knew it and I was like, awesome. I had to turn around and go, wow, profound. That's a theme in the book.
Yeah.
It's telling you what's going on. A lot of people think Road of Kings is the Venture made up. That's being Venture. Yeah, okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, to a certain degree, but, yeah, you know,
sure.
It's not just that.
You're going to see bits and pieces. Sure. I'll give it to you. But when you hear about that, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven, what Ventru modern walks around with that mentality? Like, it's unheard of.
Right.
What are you talking about? It's just, it's money, bro. We're here about money, power, influence, and people. That's what we do. But this is the very origins. This is carving out of a brutal society, which is what, it's a society of predators. And right. This says here, there's already laws that were set, and we're going to follow the traditions of those laws, but then add our own right to rule through it. And a lot of people go, what does that mean? Right to rule? Like, who decided you had the right to rule? Cain did.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the point. Their belief is that he is the one that deigned them to do it. Now, why? Why Ventru specifically? Well, in the writings of Vidartha, they're antediluvian, it was declared that in the first city, you know, it was supposed to be an Asher Enoch that ruled.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, Enoch put that crown on Cain's head. That's who ruled. And ever since, Cain had his favorites. And we all know from the Venture Revised that apparently Vidartha was considered thumbs up.
Right. That's the one, you know, the one to rule.
Now, why that's interesting, because based on that, you get the idea of the path of Road of Kings, Road of the Vizier. Vidartha, that means Vidartha, not the ruler. But Darth is the influencer to the ruler, which in this instance would be Cain. And this thing, and it starts threading out from there. I mentioned that to keep in the back of your head. The book, of course, doesn't go that deep with it, but its roots right. are here. It kind of right. massages it into it. Now, other than my psychobabble on that, the other part of this is the Road of Kings is also about rebellion. You must understand that. Most people are going to read this and go, it's just about aristocracy and blah, blah, blah. How does one get to be a king?
Yeah, that's an interesting point that you're making, because in this book, you will find as you read through it, oftentimes it is almost required of you as a scion to take the dictates of your path. You know, the road that you have to follow, those little sins, and just go, I'm going to ignore that one right now. I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to jump the line. I know what I'm supposed to do. I know what's required of me, but I'm not going to do that. And doing that, rebelling against even your own path, is a source for many of the scions to get ahead.
And you're 100% right, because their number one rule that's unspoken, but it's known. The only sin of the Road of Kings is failure.
Mm-hmm.
That's the quote. And when you hear that, yes, by any means, right, is what that says. And it becomes interesting because they believe the will to power is a matter of the individual choice to take power itself. Right? That mm-hmm. means the divine right of kings is this unshakable will to achieve power no matter what may stand in the way. Interesting. When you think about kings and those who lord over an empire, they did it through violence. They did it through saying they're the ones in charge and their opponents came and they won. That's right. How it's done. There's no shock here. There's no what? Yeah, that's right. That means all your romance ideas about rulers, by rights of blood. Right. As long as your dad's super badass army sticks around, right, I guess right. the son matters. But when Nate and Bob get there to kick over the kingdom and your army right. gets crushed because UML is awesome, that's that. And then we won't have a ruler because we believe in adequate muffins. Right? That's how it goes.
right,
but that's
right.
but that's the goal. But importantly, rolling through this, the Road of Kings is hard, right? Because it also points out, freedom cannot be taken, only relinquished. Fear and respect permit this. Now, why I adore Road of Kings is because that's a Machiavellian quote damn near. Right? It is right. better to be feared and respected than loved. Right? That's the whole thing. And when you read Machiavelli's The Prince, you get that. But I'll give you the short version. Rather, they already did, right? And just put it here. Their logic is what's interesting. They say that there are two types of people. Those who were meant to rule, those who will rule, and those who will follow. And that's mm-hmm. it. And you decide where you go. But it's a right. choice. You have the choice and therefore the freedom to pick where you go. And there are people who want to be led. They don't want to rule, right? And but they don't want to be treated bad. Don't misunderstand right. that. To be ruled over does not mean, yeah, you get to treat me like crap now.
Right, to be dominated.
There's a method here, right? So if I'm feared and respected, I won't dare to rise up against my ruler once I've told them, I want you to be my ruler. And I respect them because they take care of me. That's where the respect comes from. The fear is because that guy's probably a badass.
Right.
That's why he's where he is, right? He's somebody strong enough to stand there and protect us and do what they do. And that's essentially it. But this whole book goes through at length. And any points you want to hit, Nate, I just made...
Oh, no, I was just... I was letting you kind of to go in on that. But actually, I did want to step back a little bit.
Sure.
And just talk about that very first story that involves a character by the name of Daniel, who is a poet, and Henry, a young knight who is sort of coming into his own, stepping into the Road of Kings. And it is... I'll say this, it's kind of like a pretty stereotypical story of a Cainite who is just recently embraced, entering into the world of darkness. And you have this other character who's kind of, held into a high regard, but never taken into the world of vampires, as in never embraced. And you sort of flash forward and the poet Daniel becomes very old and infirm, and he's, you know, nearing the end of his life. And then, Henry comes and visits him, and, Henry feels bad because he kept his art for himself and never, you know, let him out into the world. And Daniel doesn't feel bad about it. Daniel, it actually feels great that he had the opportunity to, experience life with Henry, and Henry never having aged. And, you know, it's kind of like, it's got that, that little like romantic kind of feel to it. You know, the Cainite who, you know, his duty is to rule and protect those weaker. And, you get the impression that there's like, some of that chivalry going on, and, you know, he feels bad. He feels bad because he hasn't aged, and he'll lose this beauty forever. And then you have the mortal who's just like, I'm just glad I had the opportunity. Like, this shit was awesome. And I just wanted to compliment it, because while it's not like a mind blowing story, I do really appreciate those little parts of Vampire the Masquerade that shows like, yeah, this character is immortal, but like, it's not all fun and games. Like, you still have to endure those that you've loved, those that have affected you, wither away and die. And a character like this feels like it's their duty. And I was just like, I like that story a lot. So I just wanted to touch on it real quick.
That story is awesome because it highlights the book.
Yeah.
It highlights what Road of Kings is, right? Does that mean you're the good guy? Yes. Well, what's been honored here, right? It's terms of good is it blurs a bit. But here's the reality. Yes, you're a vampire. You're a lord. Great. But here's a servant that has served well in your name, and you have rewarded accordingly. And their successes have been your successes, and thus have added to your name. And as you've got promoted through the path, which, by the way, is the only road I've read where paths matter.
Right.
I don't mean paths. I meant...
You mean like where you're going
promotions.
Along the road.
Promotions.
Right. Promotion and the
promotions
road.
Promotions is what I meant.
Yeah, let's articulate that real quick. There's the road, right? The Road of Kings. There are paths, like Path of the Vizier and Path of Chivalry. And then there's like the path you take getting promoted through the road.
Right, and then there's official titles, right?
Right.
Through the promotion. Well, let me say this. We haven't read through every road yet, but this one definitely codifies having title and what it means
to do it. Right. To be fair, for those that are listening that have listened to every podcast, we've only actually read through The Road of the Beast so far. And so it's distinctly possible. We just don't know about the stuff coming. Be patient. Calm down. We'll get to that.
But that story is an all-in-one and shows you a good example of it. They also give you bad ones. Not in story, but you could see it. We'll just say it. Path of the Tyrant.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's it. Well, it's in the name.
So that's the thing I want to talk about, you know, in the review sense, the way that this first chapter is written, you know, you have that one character, I believe his name is Acidonis, and I pronounced that wrong, I know, sorry, but he's the main teller of the story. And then you have all of these other scions who are like, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about, or that guy's wrong about that, or the way that I think is this because I'm, you know, I'm the king of this. And well,
couple,
I love that.
Well, a couple, the debate is from, one is Rodrigo, who we know is on Road mm-hmm. of the Beast, or Road of the Beast is where he comes from. Because we just read about that. So mm-hmm. what should shock you is Camilla.
Yeah. That, well, it did. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going through here and there's Antasia, there's Fiore, there's Camilla. There's a bunch of individuals where you're like, whoa, that's cool.
Camilla punched me in the face when you read it, and she's a sinner, or he's a sinner.
Right, right, right.
That's what he is. He didn't give a damn. Like, when you think of Rome and the patricians, you're thinking, oh, well, they must all wrote a king's about. I know I did.
Yeah.
But when you get Camilla, it's like, no, it's a sinner. I was like, it makes sense. Yeah. It makes sense.
It's a really cool way to tell this story because you have the story of the Road of Kings. You have the individual that's telling that story. And then you have all of these other Cainites that are on different roads. And they're like, well, you know what I think about that? And so you get not only the view from within, but you get the view from without as well. And I thought that was really cool.
And none cooler than when he starts to go over points, right? When he starts talking mm-hmm. about the way that they rule and why they rule, it's great to see a Bruja step in and try to, or a Scion even argue. I don't even know if that guy who does interrupt is Bruja. Definitely seems it, right? Because mm-hmm. he steps up, refers to Carthage a lot and blah, blah, blah. Typical signs. An author right. indicates that, but they also indicate Carthage as being this land of brotherhood. That if the Scions just went there and visited, it could have been that.
Yeah, yeah.
I caution you. If you do your homework, if you read deep, Carthage was not what the hell this guy is talking about. That the author's wrong.
No. And that's the thing. Like, all of these Bruja, like, look, let's have a real moment here. If you're playing an Elder Bruja, and you truly believe that Carthage was this great, wonderful utopia, you know you're wrong, and you know what you did.
Right.
So stop it now.
Just stop your lies right there.
Yeah. I get it. The Ventru came in. They did you dirty. But you know what you did. But why? You know what you were doing.
But why did the Ventru have to come in? And that's when that starts, oh, well, we don't talk about that at parties. Yeah, okay. We're over here now.
They just hated our peace and prosperity. Okay. That's what the Bali thing too, right?
We were Carthage and we had BDE and we wore the clothes that showed that, and the Ventru were upset and they came over and they said, you can't have that BDE. And that was it. Yeah. Wear some clothes, you heathens.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not at all what you were doing to the people and making them worship you. Like, we won't even get into that.
It's lovely to get into. But I enjoy their called out, right? They call out the kings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that gets hammered over here that strikes me that they're silent on, it says that, okay, it's great that you rule. It's great that you seize the right to rule. But mm-hmm. now you have to care for those you rule over.
Yeah.
And that is a big point of it. We know this because we just went over the fact that Cain has traditions, right? And its traditions are still followed at this point.
The old ways.
And the old ways have to be upheld. And the princes uphold it. And there's a reason why most princes are scions. It's that simple. Even talk about it, spread throughout. And the reason being is because a prince should care for those on his demesne. Because they, in turn, give vassalage.
I'm sorry, Bob. Demesne.
Demesne.
You know somebody's going to say it.
Sorry. How about this? The turf.
You're right.
The turf.
They're going to come on your turf. They're going to fuck up your turf. Them's your people. You better take care of them.
Rule the block, son. All right, so it's Road to Bling. All right, so that's what we're talking about. So, yeah, you got these princes.
Road to Bling.
Road to Bling. All right, so you got these princes.
I hate your soul.
These princes are set up, and they're regional, right? Really worldwide at this point, as far as they have known world being Europe. And that's where everything is. Now, these princes agree, to a certain extent, of the traditions and how they should be run. Everyone has it different, but I'll agree with this. You have to cultivate blood. You have to have a, what's the word I'm using? Turf?
Demesne.
Demesne, okay.
but turf, yes.
All right.
Demesne.
Demesne. Okay, demesne. Okay, so you have the demesne, domain.
Yeah, but no, it's not domain, it's demesne.
No, it's domain because it's the domain of dough.
You're right.
Domain.
I got you.
There it is. So, all right, so the domain is where these princes have. And the way they rule it basically is you got to have a good place to have mortals want to return and be ignorant of the terrors during the night. Now, it's a delicate balance. They also need to be aware. Remember, they got to fear you and respect you. The fear should be because you keep the devil at bay. However, you're that devil. You see what I'm saying? They'll permit you doing whatever excess you want, but a wise prince tempers that. You keep that beast in check. And, you know, you go, like, they have this great thing where they talk about mirrored domains, right? And what that mm-hmm. means is you won't find that a ruler or prince is going to be sitting in a farmhouse east of Jesus somewhere when it's supposed to be in France, mm-hmm. right? And there's a king in France, there's France. He wants to be a part of that court. And so a strategy is, okay, great. We'll fund to set up this huge domain, this huge, you're screwing me up with this word, like.
Turf.
Turf. You're setting up this huge turf. And basically it's an estate. And you have it built, you know, over time. You massage money into it, extra resources. And as it's built up, what you do is you don't move anyone in. Meaning you're not there immediately. But the Lord's going to notice it. Whoever's in charge is going to go, who the hell put this palisade that arguably is better than mine, because mine's a bit run down and needs work. Marble. You have a marble floor. Oh, look, there's busts of angels and gargoyles. What is this? This is glorious. Who did? Well, and then he goes to look. Who owns this? This is my turf, domain, demesne, whatever. I'm going to say domain. Okay, and that's it. This is my domain. Who built on it? And then when he goes to look, and it turns out, oh, he owns that land and he owns that place. That's his. And it's a gift from so-and-so. You're welcome. And well, who's so-and-so? And then your ghoul comes walking in. Ah, well, me, my lord. I wanted to stay here, and I wanted to give you an example of something worth blah, 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 blah for you. You're awesome. And then that guy's going to go, thumbs up. I accept your gift. May you stay here, and I expect you to attend blah, 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 blah. Because now I want to heap on someone who has a benefactor of money. So great, he does that. Meanwhile, at night, you guys are given whatever quarters you're given by him, because he accepted your gift, and you're able to sneak in under the wire, and your lord now stays in a tomb, but at night might hold court in that estate because he built it.
Dude, I got to tell you, I hate to interrupt you while you're making your point, but like, I got to tell you, I've always had like a bit of hesitancy with Dark Ages because like, I just, there was something about it that like, I couldn't wrap my brain around. And reading about you have your court during the day, right? You have your king, your queen, your blah, 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 your baron. And at night they go to sleep. And when they go to sleep, the night court arises. It was like something in that description, in just that writing in this book, like made it click for me. And I don't know why it took that long, but I was like, oh, now that really makes sense. You have an ability to have the court. Because there's kind of like that unspoken, like, we better stay in bed because they're up and they're moving. And I was just like, that vision to me was enough to make me go, I think I can get Dark Ages.
Right.
So,
and it's one of those things too, that a lot of people believe, and many players believe, that when you make a vampire, you're the show. And that's it. But you don't give any thought as to how that show conducts itself. And it's sort of a learning process, figure it out process. And that's sort of between you and the ST. And it may take years for you to read it in a book and get it. And that's okay. Right. But this book definitely outlines the halls of power for anyone, really, that you're expecting it to be, you know, followed and so on.
Yeah.
But I digress. The point here, Prince takes care of his people because it cultivates the blood. That's the point. He also takes care of his vassals. You swear fealty to the prince. Great. As long as you are successful, can't suck. You can't.
Right.
Right. That's what it is. I mean, if you're there and you're good, you'll get reward. If you're there and you suck, well, you get a chance to redeem yourself, but your name is besmirched. And you're going to have to clean it up a bit, or you're going to stay in that role forever. And they kind of outline that process, but there's a lot. And we can go, and this is a book of semantics.
Yeah, it really is. And not in a bad way, though.
No.
But when you think about, like, courtly life, and you think about royalty and chivalry and, you know, how that's new in the world. And, you know, it's becoming a focal point for a lot of the Cainites. You need to know about this stuff. And I think that, you know, I've expressed in previous podcasts, like, I wish they had done in modern day what they did in the Dark Ages. And this book made me want it even more because I was like, man, this is everything I wanted to know about this road. And not just like as a player, but also as a storyteller. You know, and there's all these new, so I don't want to get too overly excited and lose my point, but when we get into chapter 2, I just want to get your opinion about something. They mention the Fosterage Chronicle
Yep.
and fostering. What is your opinion on that?
The whole point of fostering, if you think way back when we did the what we were calling kind of the boring book, mm-hmm. because it was telling you what the Dark Ages is and what it's like to be a lord and have a manor. You recall yeah. they talk about the process of squiring to knighthood yep. and how yep. a squire is sent to actually a different lord to serve yes. under for X amount of time to move up. They honor that process.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what the fosterage is. And what it is yeah. is brilliant because it's showcasing two things. First thing is the masquerade birth. Now, yes. I'm not talking the masquerade as in, you know, it in the Dark Ages now, the silence and blah, blah, blah. I'm talking about them seeming like mortals. That's exactly what this is. They adopt the very best behaviors they enjoy mm-hmm. and they emulate them in the night court. This is yet another thing. Now, this is the interesting part. It's the one thing I read in this book that defies the laws of Cain. Plain and simple. Where? Siring.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that law? That traditional right. Cain said, right. if you embrace someone, what that shield do, that reflects on you.
Right, exactly.
And if that shield screws up, you are done right along with them.
Right.
And in here, they're saying, nope, we do fosterage. And so, I will. Nate makes me and sends me off to England. And there
yeah, I
and there and there I serve under the most powerful of the land.
Right.
Typically. And it's a prince. Right. And that prince is going to groom me. Old Mithras is going to go, you be at the Mithraeum. I want you to do yeah. a lot more push-ups and squats and killing people things. right. I want you to be a super machine of death.
Mithras is like, do your calisthenics.
Get over there, kill people. Well, why? Everyone starts somewhere.
But I think that like what you're saying about it being like kind of a defiance of the old ways, I think it's actually, it's a little bit more interesting than that because it shows you how intricate and tied the scions are to one another. Because basically what's happening there is there's some powerful prince or some powerful elder, and he's going, I have such trust in you on the road of kings, being a scion, being born and bred to rulership, that I'm going to let you embrace someone because you've earned the right, and then I'm going to let you send them to me, and I'm going to raise them. That's how confident I am in you that your child won't fuck up because I'll take the responsibility on my chest. So, and in turn, I'll send you mine.
So what this is saying to me is that that's the devil's fucking deal. I F-bombed. Right. Sorry.
Yes.
It's the devil's deal. And that's because what he said was, I trust you. You're screwed. Red flag number one. When you're, yeah. when your prince or elder tells you, well, I trust you with this. Great. Right? All right. Okay. That's number one. Number two, the child you let me have and I embraced them, you're now taking to learn under you. Oh, what a great honor, my lord. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
In the back of my head. Oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
Right.
And in the description too, they're like, they're basically what you're doing is you're sending a spy and they know you're sending a spy because they're also sending a spy. But like, there's this backhanded tutelage.
You don't talk about it.
Right.
You expect it. You don't talk about it. You expect it and you hand wave it.
But it is, the reason why, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the reason why I like this the best is because it also inspired me. Like where the one was like, hey, this is how you could do a cool Dark Ages game. Then it was like, here's how you could do it with some new vampires that you have no reason to be around each other, except you're all trying to get onto this road of
right.
the kings. So,
well, it's interesting though, because we got to remember to get to the fosterage, mm-hmm. right? They talk about their immense selection. Long thought to be a venture process and in just how, you go through all the tutelage, the jumping through hoops, prepping them and selection and testing them to be a proper noblesse oblige ventru. No,
mm-hmm.
that's a scion. That's scion training. It literally is scion right. training. Now, more than take the bet, read the book and understand that that's what it is. It's such an exhaustive process to, and by the way, I'm just going to dumb it down. We know the ventru process of embrace. If not, no, it's extensive and selective.
Right.
It's every bit as much as how they feed. Right. Now, understand that they also, on this road of kings, believe that, well, it starts when you're a ghoul. It starts yeah. when you're a ghoul. We breed, and we're grooming you, not breeding you, we're grooming you to be able to walk this road, and it's a dastardly tactic, because these guys invented, well, now that we groomed you to walk this road, now you take the oath of initiation, that night we embrace you, you wake up, and it'll be leagues from now. Maybe even centuries, who knows,
right.
before you learn there are even other roads out there. And that's by design. So we're going to tell you you have the right to rule, that you come from greatness. You walk the road of kings and princes. This is right. what you're destined for. Before you ever learn about different ways to accept your vampiric existence. And that's the success yep. of the Road of Kings.
Another thing that I really, really appreciate about this book is that in every page, in every paragraph, in every chapter, if you know what to look for, you can pick out tiny little bits and pieces of how the founders came about to create the Camarilla.
Yep.
There is so much foundational information in here where you're like, that's where that comes from. And now, granted, you know, it's written sort of like in reverse, but it's like, obviously it came from somewhere. And when you're writing a fiction like this, it makes sense that these elders that came together that went, you know, we can't really do chivalry anymore. We can't really do the courtly life, but these are our beliefs. These are foundational to what right. we believe. Let's instill that in this new organization that we're going to build. And I just think it's really interesting. Also, like the term Justicar right there, like that's where it came from. Well, Justicar in the Camarilla is basically a Justicar for the path.
Since you brought it up, we're going to just gonna put, no, it's actually a point I wanted to hit, right? It's everyone wants to know where the idea of a Justicar comes from and where they, it's in this book. Yeah. And here though, it's an Inquisitor thing. And the whole point of the Inquisition and the Sabbat is to be an internal police, right? And we know that. And obviously look for infernalism. Well, ironically, the same mentality for a Justicar here is the same thing. Remember an Ashen Priest. And what they do is they serve for the spirituality of said court, right? And by spirituality, we're referring to the roads. Right. That you should go to an Ashen Priest to talk to them about the road you're on and other roads. And different roads, princes permit to have an Ashen Priest for that. Well, ironically, there are a group of rulers of prestige, one being Mithras, right? Another one being Montano, who have signed documentation that states that amongst the Ashen Priests, an equivalent of power and prestige that is must be a Scion is chosen to be a Justicar. And that Justicar is above any ruling of a prince, and they're only there to do two things. One is to act against a prince, but to investigate a ruling of a prince abusing that authority. But there's a strict clause, right? Has to be in defiance of the Scions, has to be in defiance of the mortals, has to be in defiance of God, right? Something abominable about the prince has to be there, and then they will conduct an investigation, and then if founded, they'll call a conclave. That even that term is like here to tell you what that is, right? And then it comes in. But wait a minute. Someone goes, hold on a second. We're not going to have these random Justicar people walking around and screwing up my princedom. No. That ain't going to happen. And these monarchs were like, what are we going to do about that? And turns out the Court of Love goes, well, just do what we did. We accept them. Hi, Justicar. Great. Here are the five knights we've chosen to accompany you, to assist you in all your endeavors. What does that mean? It means the Justicar is a wackadoo. And is going into it for his own power, and he's going to screw around. Those five will end him, right? However, because the Justicar is never that way, right? That's why you're chosen, is to not be that guy. He instead gets a martial arm of a group of people to run with him to observe a domain. I hate that I'm tripping up in this word now.
That's okay.
So
just think domain, but then add knee, domain.
No, I'm going to say it, domain. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, that's okay. I think, honestly, those words are probably pretty interchangeable. And I like domain anyways, because I like serious force.
I was making an effort. Domain, wrote a bling. Okay, so it's so the domain, right? And that's the point of them doing that. And that's kind of your birth seeds for the Justicar and the Archons. That it doesn't end there, right? There's a ton of titles in this book that explain what a Justicar, or excuse me, what a sheriff is. And a scourge and why they have it and what went into it. And ironically, you already heard about these in another book. Meaning they're so common outside of the Road of Kings, it talks about the very prestige and influence Road of Kings has on canine society.
Right. Right. And it just honestly it goes into so much detail. I was like, wow, like there's so much information from like the very beginning all the way up until the very end. And I was like, it's like a clan book. I don't want to go too deep into this, but it even has, and I don't remember, did Road of the Beast have this too, like an entire chapter dedicated to kind of like storytelling as and for characters on the Road of Kings.
I want to say yes, because it gives you an idea of how to present what it is and what it is that they go through. So definitely it had an idea. But it was written in the fashion of someone reading Road of the Beast, so it wouldn't have seemed as instructional. It's like, if you're going to be doing this, there's that, all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, this chapter is really great. Gives you a ton of information. Just, it's like, if you're playing a character that's going to be on Road of Kings, this is kind of a no-brainer, but this book is super essential. Like, it gives you so much information on, like, I don't know if you find this, but people always seem to be asking, what's the right way to do it? And, you know, normally we're like, there is no right or wrong way. It's just the way that you want to do it. But this gives you so much info where you can go, oh, this is kind of the way I can properly portray this road and leave no questions behind.
When someone asks, is there a right or wrong way to portray something? The answer is yes, when you don't have a guideline.
Right.
Right. When you're just spitting in the dark, you're going to come up with something that most likely isn't going to be what you wanted, because it's not going to feel the same. Because you're going off the top of your head, don't really know. However, this book is the guideline. That's what it is. It's a guideline. It doesn't tell you. Let me bring this point up, because it's one of the biggest ones in this book, and the one actually makes me vomit in my mouth a little bit when I hear about it. It's when someone tells me, Honorable Cord is what comes from the Road of Kings. And I'm like, oh, did it take you long to think of it? Right? It's immediately what comes into my head. And it's like, Bob, why so dismissive? Well, because you don't know what the road of or the path of chivalry is out of the Road of Kings, right? That's like you're not thinking of it. Because when you read that, you understand that, sure, honor's a thing, but honor's a personal thing.
Right.
For instance, if you want to talk about the honor of someone being a crypt in L.A. in 1990, whatever, thrown down, absolutely, there's a code of the street. There's something to believe in. There's do's and don'ts. And if you're down and you're one of those type of people, that's the way it is. But you're going to seem to have an honor amongst your own people. But is it going to be the same honor as a cop who believes in protect and serve that's existed in Beverly Hills?
No. It's interesting that you should mention that. I've been reading a book about Al Capone, and it's like a 600-page book. And a big part of what they talk about in this book is the code of the racketeer, right? So the racketeer has a code, right? They feel themselves to be kind of like Robin Hood. Right. So they don't turn their guns on the innocent, on women and children and people that aren't involved in organized crime. Do they think it's right? Yeah, they do, because it's the lies that they tell themselves to be along this code, right? Or like The Wire, you know, a man's got to have a code,
right?
That's like the big thing in there. So yeah, chivalry and, having, upholding an oath or being an honorable accord. Yeah, they originate probably from the same place, but they are not the same thing.
Right. And there's a couple books now that have stressed this. And they don't say it in this book because they highlight it in a duh, right? We talked about it enough.
Right.
And what this is that vampires, including the Road of Kings, view chivalry as a pawn's game. They love it. It's great. They endorse it because it gives you awesome vassals who will never betray it.
Right.
Right? Because they agree to the yoke. They want to serve. That's what they feel their own life is. Great. Let them feel it. Works for me, and you move on, and you hope that 100%. You have a few, and that's it. And when you're thinking to yourself, wait a second, I'm in the Sabbat, an honorable accord. Yes, same thing, Jack. You serve the Sabbat,
right?
Read that path. Absolutely. It's the same thing. The differences being what they are, but the point is that you begin to understand that chivalry does not mean necessarily knighthood. It means the romanticized ideals of what that comes with, right? And this book outlines that again by saying, okay, great, here's the path of chivalry. And it tells you your word is awesome, no doubt. That, I mean, your word, your honor is all. Word's part of that. But serving, oh man, that's super important. But most important, even with those things, just to say, not against, with those things, you have to understand it is to protect those weaker than you.
Right.
And all mortals
you are already asserting yourself as being better.
Right.
There is a big assertion, and that's a common thread throughout this road and its paths, is your position being of greater value or greater worth or higher on the totem pole, if you will, than those below you. You don't protect the weaker because of some you know, necessity, like to feel good. You do it because it's your duty as someone greater. That's
it's simple.
It's that's same thing with the kings, with the, you know, high up on the you know, on the throne. Their duty is to protect those below them because those below them are beneath them.
And they also serve them.
Right.
Right. They outline that, that, you know, if they take care of you, you will see to their protection, especially if they're obeying you. And that's, and do you hear what I'm saying? I'm trying to put that emphasis. You obey me, I will protect you. You don't obey me, I am who you need to fear.
Right.
And that's what it comes down to. And the guys on chivalry, these paladins, as they're called, they're the ones to understand to be the strong arm. You've dishonored your word and broke your oath to our liege. It is on. Draw your weapon, sir. We are coming. Don't draw your weapon. We're still coming.
Right.
You're not going to hold us back. Honor's already been broken. We're just going to put you down and grant you the swiftest end that we can. Now, not the only road there, but why I'm pointing out that distinction is because a lot of people want that guideline, the flavor of it. What I want to point out is that when you look at the ideals, right? I believe they're called ideas. You have the book open on it right now. There's the sins, right? And above
there's practices. Yeah, there's ethics, practices, and, you know, obviously your virtues, but those are...
The ethics are what you want to look at. How do I portray this path? What do I got to do? The ethics are your guiding light. Your ethics are what everybody should see you uphold. It's anyone. As long as you obey those three ethics and they're always in your thoughts and dictated to your actions and shown, you are on the road.
Right.
It's that simple. The sins are very personal. The sins are situational, and they give you a guideline, really the ST a guideline, to observe the character as they go through it. But if you're upholding the ethics, odds are you're upholding the sins, right? You're fine. Right. You should be avoiding, you know, failing, so to speak.
Yeah. When I'm playing a character, I try to make sure to take all of those little key factors and just keep them at the forefront of my mind. Like when I've been playing this game since the 90s, and every time I play a character that's on a path or I play a character that's on a road, I try to make sure I have that in front of me at all times, just so I can, as I make a decision, I can go, does that make sense in my path? Does that make sense in my road? Because even if you feel like you have a great understanding of it, the books are here for a reason. Like, use them to help you, to guide you through your role play. You know, that should be a no brainer. But, you know, for me, when I was a young player, I always tried to do this. Yeah, I know how to play. I don't need no books. Cool. That's great, man. That's great. And then in retrospect, I'd go, I think I fucked that up.
Right.
And so now as a more mature player, I go, you know what? I've got a library, whether it's on my iPad, on my bookshelf. I should use that to help me, just not so I can portray it right, but just so I can play what I've made properly.
There is a personal ownership to you playing game. Now, a lot of people say, Bob, Nate, man, you take games serious. Way serious. No, we enjoy it and we're passionate about it.
Yeah,
and so we're going to give it the attention due. And that is one way to play the game. However, if you're going to be someone who thinks you're going to jump in, you got your base books, all you need, and you made your little brouhaha, and you're going to jump in, now you're going to run shop, and you're going to avatar play. You're going to play you in the world of darkness and whatever setting you're playing with us. You're going to get wrecked. And it's not even by us. It's going to be because the storyteller's dealing with people. It's a level of understanding. If you're here and you're just ditching the books, you're just going to play your sheet. No problem. But then play your sheet. And you're going to have difficulty, and you're not going to know why. And no one's going to hold your hand and guide you through every little step possible except the storyteller. But understand, that's almost disrespectful.
Right.
Because everybody's there to play a game, and we know what it's like to be a storyteller. If you have someone sitting down who didn't even care to learn what their stuff does, they're now asking you to stop the role of the story and the fun, to break down every mechanic that you were choosing not to read. You just don't want to do it. And there's a little level of read you got to do because it's a game and it comes in a book, and that's what it is. And you only have a small section of the book to go through.
Yeah.
So that's what we're saying is it's sure.
You don't need to read every single thing in every single book. Like, obviously, if everybody did that, we couldn't have a podcast. That's just the truth. But when you decide, like, man, I want to play this, you know, Zamis badass, you know, who owns this, like, you know, has control over this massive domain. And, you know, he's got all these, you know, ghouls that run after him and, you know, do all his work for him. Okay, well, I need you to read these things. I need you to understand these things. And I'll use it as an example. I watch a lot of videos on YouTube of people that make miniature scenery. I don't do it. I don't make miniature scenery. I just like watching them do it. But when they sit down to make something, a diorama, they make sure to adhere to the rules of their, you know, the miniaturization of what they're building, light, you know, how trees look, how water looks. And that's why they're so interesting, is because, yeah, they have all the creativity in the world to make whatever they want, but they're using the foundational rules of what a thing is, right? Use the foundational rules of what vampire is, and that will help you to better portray it. And thus the game will seem more realistic, more consumable, more playable for you and your storyteller.
You know, that's what we talk about a lot in The Road to Bling. Is don't right. just talk about it, be about it. That's right, what it is. Right. You got to understand it. You don't flap your gums and say you know a thing, you're going to get tested. And when you're tested, you right. look like a fool. You're the one who chose the path of ignorance. And that's what it is. You want to learn something, though, and you portray that. I'm all about people who say, I didn't have time to read all the books. I'm here to learn. Please mm-hmm. be patient. Everybody going to turn out pockets to help you out.
Yeah,
everybody is.
Well, and that's like the other side of the coin. Like, you're a new player, you want to play. That's awesome. Like, be open and be a sponge. And, you know, as a storyteller, I'll help you get there. Right. But when you come to the table and you're like, I know everything about my Zemis and blah, 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 blah. And you're off in some strange world doing crazy things. And I'm like, I thought you were on the Road of Kings. Right. And you're like, yeah, but like, I've been lying and like backstabbing. And then like, I'm going to murder these people, but like not tell anybody. And you're like, wait, what? What? Yeah, I'm on the Road of Kings. Are you? Yeah, I know how to do it. Screw you. And they get up from the table and they leave. And you're like, wait, what? What just happened?
Right, right.
It's, you know, be open to learn.
And so, and that's we'll put a note there to continue on. Mm-hmm. But it's a distinction that needed to be done. The rest of it, right, we talked about Path of Chivalry. Mm-hmm. What did you think of Path of the Merchant?
You know what I thought? Like, the Path of the Merchant, I was like, okay, I want to play a Giovanni, I want to play a Ventru, and then this is where they become in the modern era. Like, I read that, and I was like, I get it now. I see where they came from.
Right.
The merchants came in, and they were like, yeah, we're not real powerful, but, like, we'll just buy your domain. We'll just, like, buy your territory. I'll just buy your castle. I was like,
we'll
I get it.
Buy an army? Like, we're good.
Right.
Just,
right.
Right. It's funny.
Yeah. You were talking about like right to rule. Well, it turns out I've got all this gold and this army I bought. So what's up?
Look at this grill. Look at these diamonds.
Right.
I'm shining, son. Yeah, sure, you rule, but I'm out here getting it done. And that's
okay.
And I agree. I enjoyed that, Pat, but definitely saw the origins from it. The one in here that I think is a sleeper path that mm-hmm. most people won't take, because they don't understand what it is. But that was then. I think after the advent of Game of Thrones, people now understand.
Oh, you mean Littlefinger?
Right, absolutely. Right, Road or Path of Azir. And understand this right. path, when we say Littlefinger,
uh-huh.
or the spider, various the spider, absolutely.
Yep.
That's what this is.
It's 100%.
And that's it. You've all seen Game of Thrones. You're nerds, like us. So we can leave that alone. We know what that is, but that path's in here, and it gives you a great idea. You want to know how to do it? Watch the show again and read that path, and you're on it. The one in here that's a sleeper, is the Tyrant.
Uh-huh.
I know we talked about it earlier. It shocked me to see it, because I know for a fact that the Road of Sinners, have mm-hmm. a version of this.
Yeah.
And it was trippy to see. And probably, just to segue, move on. Not much need to be said. We know what a tyrant is. You can get an idea how bad this gets, right? When you look at this path, though, this artwork, why is it in the Dark Ages the Zemis have tentacles? Octopus tentacles.
You know what, dude? I gotta say, there's like a couple of pictures in here where there's like some Zemis or something with tentacles. And I'm of like a split mind on it. I'm like, that's kind of cool. But also I'm like, that's kind of like, it's kind of played, isn't it? Like,
but
at this point,
but why is it cool? Like, are you on the ocean?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know what this person is.
Like, aren't they landlocked?
Like,
I don't know. It
keeps baffling me because I'm seeing it. I'm like, they just look like some octopus tendrils hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does it make it easier for you to grab a gobbet? You're like, I hate it when I'm at the court and my gobbet always falls out of my hand. So I just...
You know what I could use? I could use, like, 15 legs with suckers on them. Right. You want to hook me up? Okay.
Maybe that's how they keep their coin.
Yeah.
Each sucker's designed to hold a certain amount of metal with pressure. Like, mini suckers are in the big sucker, and they're like, ah, it's 20 gold per suction cup. I don't really know. But that's the...
It's like the example character in here... the Iron Mistress, you know, she's got the Goro arms and then a bunch of like tendrils coming out of her back. And I was like, that's cool and all. I get it. But also, I don't, what? Why? I don't know. Okay. All right. Don't question it. Then you start going down a hill. You start going into a hole and you're like,
ah. It was just me being curious because I was, when I first saw the template, I was like, that's a Mistress Lissandra. What is that Shadow? Oh, my name's Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Them straight octopus. Okay.
Yeah. I guess she that's what I thought too. Yeah.
But there is a decent, I memorized the page earlier. There's a picture in here of a chick who cut off the head of someone and she's just holding up the head.
Yeah.
And it looks like she's a soldier. Yeah. It's a badass picture.
Yeah.
That's in that book I thought was styling.
It's, really it's page 78. Yeah. No, I mean, the artwork is pretty great. I mean, the characters, the example characters are pretty consistent with the other ones. Of course, I always like the imagery for the individual paths. Yeah. I also really like the extra disciplines that they added in here. Usually I'm not a big discipline guy, but I like the one with, it's like Auspex too. And you just know if somebody's lying. Like, I don't need to read your aura. I don't care about your feelings. I just know if you're lying. And I was like, that needs to be in a modern book. Maybe it is. I don't know.
You can throw it forget. There.
Yeah,
throw
whatever.
Aura of Inescapable Truth, baby. No, but the coolest aspects about this book is it highlights what disciplines are used. One of the coolest, I should say. Now, that's something consistent. They keep that in the format, even in the modern paths, right? That's thrown around as well. But I feel people ignore it, right? But in this book, it tells you and defines it. Like, why is presence and dominate the two biggest things on Road of Kings? Well, I don't know. I'll let you be the judge for him. Let's give a momentary pause while you rifle through 1,000 reasons why controlling the emotions of the masses and maybe, I don't know, dealing with an unruly peasant who runs into the room demanding why... You know, you're up tonight in my court. You're even sitting in my throne. Pardon me. Mm-hmm. While I use, we'll be locked gazes and I explain to the ruler who the real ruler is.
Right.
Aren't you up past your bedtime, my lord? Turns out I am. We'll deal with this tomorrow night. We certainly will. Just saying. It's one of those things where they have a lot of uses and duh, right? And that's what it comes down to. But template. I don't want to lose this. Road of Chivalry. I think it's awesome. They give it to a Torador. Well, just a Torador, a female Torador in this book who is of the romance of chivalry. That's why she's on the path. Even in the quote, it basically just outlines why she still upholds and follows to it. She's not a knight, right? You don't have to be a knight to be on the road of chivalry or the path of chivalry. And that's what I love about it, because I think people get set in their ways, right? If I'm going to be on this road, then I got to be this. If I'm going to be over here, I got to be that, right? And that's just my point.
Yeah, I mean, for as many interpretations as there are of how you play the paths and the roads, there are characters, you know, for playing them. You know? So don't limit yourself, of course. That's Road of Kings, baby. Road of Kings.
Road of Kings.
And then I guess at the end, you know, how it finalizes. It's with some of the noteworthy scions, of course. We mentioned last week that Mithras was in this, and of course he is, and he does not look like a Mithras I recognize, but that's okay.
Lord Jurgen, I prefer.
The one criticism I have in here, and I'm sure you'll know what I'm talking about, is the way that Lucida is like portrayed. Like the picture just like doesn't do it for me.
It's not only that, it's understanding where her path ends up.
Right.
It's, I don't know. Do I need to document further why Lucida should be staked for the sun? No? I mean, maybe not. Maybe that's just me talking. Like,
I'm talking about a class.
Point? It's,
right.
Like, does she do something for you that nobody else could do? Could you not think of a better inventive character that anybody more played out than Lucida? She's a hot chick. What's the tendrils? Okay.
Yeah, I don't even mind that. I don't necessarily have an issue with the character because the same character is portrayed on the front of the book. And I think that's a great picture. It's cool. It's just the way that she's like drawn in the back here with like her eyes closed and she's like ruffling her hair. And I'm like, what is, okay. All right. Cool.
Look, you know, it's a marquee character. All I'm pointing out is the modern Lucida has humanity.
That may be true. I don't know. I have not done my due diligence.
I do know. I am telling you that she has humanity, and it's not to decry you. I'm not like, Nate, listen to me. I'm just saying that she does. Right. I looked. And what annoys me at her humanity is that they talk about one of the impossible things, right? You go from having humanity to being placed upon a road, right? That's what the embrace process does in the era she was made, which means that road should have been what she's about. They place her on a road in this book, right? And that's what she's a scion. And they talk about the difficult, once you go from humanity and you accept what a vampire is on these ideals, it goes in length in Chaining the Beast about the disaster of going the other direction.
Right.
Can you apostate to another vampiric path or road? Yes. And they describe how that is damn hard, right? But doable. But how do you go back to being human?
Well, so that brings up a really good question. Because it's likely, and I haven't looked, there's no pre-planning here. The question of how the founders and many of the members of the Camarilla, before they were in the Camarilla, they transitioned to humanity, or didn't they? Or, you know, the struggle involved with that?
It's one of those things where it's carte blanche. You made the character. Here's what I'm going to tell you really happened. Here they are sitting in the studio.
Hold on. Everybody needs to listen. Turn your radios down. Please, Bob.
Here they are sitting in the studio, and they get done with the crunch of the book, the layout, and they got the stories in and everything else. And someone chirps in, we going to add any character stats for this book? We know how people love character stats. So we're just going to do it. Yeah. Just look up the Lucida from the modern and like triage. It's Road of Kings. Just throw her on one of the, a path that works for her that you think works right now. Like, yeah, it's sure. Like, some assholes on the podcast might point it out, but we'll deal with that much later, and that's what it is. Does it matter to you? Like, well, does tyranny make sense to you? Well, no. I mean, right now she's pretty much under Mankata's bloodbond BS, right? I don't know. I didn't even read what she does. Is that what happens? Well, then she doesn't go on tyranny, right? Duh. So let's move on. Yeah, okay, good idea. You know, we'll just deal with it. And I think the same thing with the founders. I think the truth is, when you talk about roads and paths, it was so far from every writer to writer's inclusion. We're not about to go read vampire philosophy when we can just write the story.
Right.
And that's what I think with these templates, what happens. But it is an annoyance factor because to me, it's like, well, then why have it?
Right.
Save some ink. And you could put an extra, I don't know, combo discipline. I don't know what you throw in these books. Just throw it in there.
Some other character. I don't know. But aside from all that, I do have to say, you know, should be pretty obvious based on our kind of running through it. I mean, I really enjoyed this book. I think it's a really valuable book, and I'm getting the impression that all of them are going to have the same kind of consistent value. Of course, I don't know. I read Road of Heaven many years ago, again, because it was all I needed to know for what I was playing. But, you know, I'm going to have to go back through that because I have only the vaguest memories of it. But I really do think it's a very valuable resource for anybody playing in a Dark Ages game, regardless of what version of Dark Ages you're playing, whether it's the V20 or the quote unquote revised, which we're reviewing now, or even before that. I think the beauty part about the Dark Ages is that even though maybe the rules adjust, the information that pertains to it really kind of is consistent across the board. You know, Road of Kings is Road of Kings is Road of Kings. There might be some subtle changes, but yeah, that's what I have to say about it. I really like the book.
I love it. Own it. Had two. I'm just saying. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
And it's well written. I think everything in there is good, thought out, and then goes in it. No writing is perfect, but the imperfections are even minor. Very minor.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's very informative, and I think all around it's a good book. So, all right, cool. Well, Road of Princes, if you're playing Dark Ages, get one. If you want some foundational history of where certain paths of enlightenment may have came from, it's a great read. Next episode, next week, we are going to be reviewing a book called Rite of Princes. I have no clue what that book is about, except I'm assuming It's about princes and what they do. So, yeah, that should be fun. Yeah. Anything else you want to express before we close out the podcast?
Not at all. Because you see, in the road of bling, my turf, my demesne, my domain, my domain, the domain is intact with fat stacks. That's how we roll back here in Blinginhood.
Cool. Well, thank you, Bob, as always, for joining me in these podcasts. And, you know, folks, feel free if you have questions about the stuff that we review, if you have comments, if you don't like our opinion, feel free. Reach out to us and let us know. We're always willing and we're always happy to engage in conversation with folks. And hit us up on Discord. You know, that's the place to find us. So other than that, we'll be back next week. Cool, Bob. Yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. Oh, real quick. Saturday, yeah. We have a movie, right?
Well, we do have a movie, but it's for patrons only.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm, well, then mm-hmm, see yeah. them there.
So if you are a backer of our Patreon and you'd like to join us on Saturday night for a little explicit B-movie action, it's happening. You know where to find the info. Again, Discord. It's like the best place for things. All right. Thanks, folks, for listening. Until next time, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Bob.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening to 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. If you like our podcast and you'd like to help support our show, consider backing us at patreon.com/25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. We offer reward tiers of additional Patreon-only podcasts, t-shirts, and personalized gaming experiences. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and go to our website, utilitymuffinlabs.com, for links to all of our social media, additional podcasts, and more. If you'd like to chat with us, submit a title for review, promote your gaming-related stuff, or anything else you can think of, email me at nathan@utilitymuffinlabs.com. Utility Muffin Labs, consistently rated adequate.